we inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
This is a battle of worldviews.
And we activate.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to The Core here on American Family Radio. Walker Wildman here with you. This is our Wednesday edition of The Core. And we've got a busy show that hopefully you'll benefit from and enjoy. Wesley, my brother Wesley Wildman, will be in with us in the second segment talking about the biblical ethic of work and how God created each and every one of us to work. In the last segment, we'll have on the agricultural commissioner, Andy Gibson from the state of Mississippi. We'll have him on to talk about U.S. agricultural policy, ESG, and also China and their buying of land, of U.S. farmland in America. We'll talk with Mississippi Agricultural Commissioner Andy Gibson, former lawmaker as well, in the last segment of the program today. Psalm chapter 72 is where we are this week. Before we jump into our scripture, I do want to cover a few housekeeping items. We're going to take calls, hopefully, at the tail end of the last segment of the program today. We'll take calls in the latter part of the program today. But if you want to email in your questions or your comments, you can do so by emailing thecore@afa.net, thecore@afa.net. Email us in your comments or your questions about all the topics that we discuss each week on the program, and we'll be glad to look at those and respond to those, hopefully on the air, but if not, definitely respond to those via email by emailing thecore@afa.net, and I'll give out the number for the show as we head into the last segment and our interview with Andy Gibson. Psalm chapter 72 is where we are. Psalm 72. David says, "Give the king your justice, O God, and your righteousness to the royal son. May he judge your people with righteousness and your poor with justice. Let the mountains bear prosperity for the people, and the hills in righteousness. May he defend the cause of the poor of the people, give deliverance to the children of the needy, and crush the oppressor." It goes on there with more descriptions of what a righteous judge, what a righteous leader, what a righteous king would look like. And you look around today and you go, is there such thing as godly leadership? Is there such thing righteous leaders? And the answer is yes, there is. And we've seen some and many throughout human history, various righteous leaders in Scripture, and David gives us really this outline of what it means to be a leader with righteousness. Psalm chapter 72 is where we are this week. We got the video up at streaming.afa.net, streaming.afa.net. You know, if you're tired of going over to YouTube and you're tired of shows that you like being deplatformed or given 1, 2, and 3 strikes like The Core did on YouTube, then we built our own video platform. I mean, who needs YouTube? That's really the question today. I know it's still a very popular platform, but folks, the reality is that the vulnerability in using these third-party platforms, specifically YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and the likes, the problem with relying solely on them is that you're beholden to their content standards, all right? And they can just overnight, boom, pull your show off their platform, and they really don't owe anybody an explanation. It's very frustrating. I'm not saying we won't be on those platforms, because we are, but we're not going to rely 100% on these third-party platforms to get our content out, to get our message out. So that's why we built AFA Streaming Video Platform. You can check that out at streaming.afa.net, streaming.afa.net. We've got our website AFR.net, where we post the podcast. We also got the AFR app that's owned and managed by us, the AFR app that's out there on various devices. And, of course, we publish the show in the podcast format each afternoon. Just type in At the Core and subscribe to the podcast. One more housekeeping item, then we'll jump into the news of the day. We got two events coming up. As I told you Monday, we are extending our registration window for Marriage Family Life Conference in July. We are extending that until the end of this month, the end of May. So a little bit more time for you to register. Go over to afa.net/events for that registration. We're also going to be at the Ark Encounter in Kentucky in October. So if you want to do something in the fall, beautiful weather there, that time of year, we're going to be at the Ark Encounter, myself, my brother, and Will and Mickey Addison, all of our families. We're going to be there at the Ark Encounter in October. AFA at the Ark is the name of the event. Be there for about a day and a half, and we hope to see you there. That's also available at afa.net/events. Well, jumping into our stories for the day, I've got to get to this clip here. This is the White House talking about whether or not they are negotiating on this debt limit. You know, they've been saying for a couple months now, we're not going to negotiate. We're not going to negotiate, which, by the way, what kind of position is that? They act like, you know, there's not, three levels of government. You know, you've got the judicial branch, three branches of government, rather. You've got the congressional branch, and then you've got the executive branch. They act like, you know, this is a monarchy or something. Like, we don't have to negotiate with anybody. You know, we're the White House, and we just tell everybody what to do. No, there's this thing called Congress, and there's like 535 people over there you got to work with. And there's this thing called passing a budget and legislation to pay our debts. So the mentality of we're not going to negotiate is a rather ignorant position to have, and non-realistic, by the way. But nonetheless, let's listen to this mix match from the White House saying we're not going to negotiate. We're going to negotiate. Clip one.
Let me just get right to, I think, the question that a lot of folks are wondering: is the White House now negotiating over the debt limit?
No. Look, Alex, default is not an option. It would tip the country into a recession and cost us millions of jobs. The president simply won't allow that to happen. What the president has been open to throughout this process is a budget negotiation, is an appropriations negotiation through the typical process. And so he's deployed his team to Capitol Hill to negotiate and find a reasonable bipartisan agreement that both parties and both chambers can support. That's the way out of this. That's the way out of this crisis. We're not going to give up the economic gains of the past 2 years. 12.7 million jobs created, 800,000 manufacturing jobs, a clean energy industry getting off the ground in this country. The president and his negotiators are going to protect those gains throughout this process.
Well, we're not going to negotiate, but our negotiating team is on the way to the Capitol as we speak. But we're not negotiating over the debt limit, but we're going to negotiate over the budget. Whatever. Is this like a word game or something? You're negotiating. All right. They're negotiating because all of the provisions that McCarthy and the Republicans wanted had to do with the budget. So they're negotiating on the budget so they can pass the debt limit. So that is, by definition, negotiating. All right, so you can play hardball all you want on TV, but they are negotiating, and that's what's going on in Washington. By the way, raise your hand if you're tired of the apocalyptic language. We're gonna avoid this crisis. No, he didn't say we're gonna avoid it. He said we're gonna get out of this crisis. What crisis? Oh, the one at the border? Oh, yeah. I got you. The fentanyl crisis. You know, the overdose deaths in America. Yep. I know that crisis. The $30+ trillion in debt. Yep, I got that crisis. But this, folks, this default is way overrated. Let me just tell you, this default is way overrated. The Treasury and the Fed, unfortunately, have so much power and leverage. These folks can come up with money where money doesn't exist. Quite literally, they did it during COVID. $7 trillion bucks they printed, fresh monies. So this idea that we're going to run out of money and we're not going to be able to pay our bills and everything is going to go, you know, down to the bottom of the ocean is an absolute hoax. It's fear-mongering. It's not true. We've been running without a debt ceiling increase for like a couple months now, and the House has not burned yet. So on one hand, the Treasury with these banks that are going upside down, on one hand, the Treasury and the Fed go, oh, don't worry, we'll bail you out. We can come up with $500 billion overnight. Do not worry. And then on the other hand, they go, if Congress doesn't pass a debt limit increase, we're all going to, the country's going to burn. Well, what happens to these banks that go upside down because they don't know what they're doing? They're being mismanaged and running these banks like they're playing Monopoly or something. So you can find $100 billion for Silicon Valley Bank, or you can find $250 billion for First Republic. But, you know, if Congress doesn't pass this unlimited debt ceiling increase, then, you know, everything's going to burn. They just pick and choose where to use the apocalyptic language. But I am so over it. I'm so numb to it. They could tell me that we're not going to pass the debt ceiling increase for the next 100 years. And you guess how much I'd sweat? Zero. I would sweat zero. It's actually a good thing. You know, we saw Washington come to a semi-halt during the Trump administration. Remember they debated over the budget for, you know, at least a couple weeks, if not a month or two. And they didn't pass a budget. I mean, they were late passing a budget. And the government, quote, shut down, even though the percentage of employees that don't work during a government shutdown is like tiny. I mean, very, very minuscule. I think they had some Park Service employees that didn't show up. And, you know, whose heart was broken over that? I mean, shout out to the park employees over there. No shot at you. But it's not apocalyptic. I mean, you can't tell me that, like, if the Natchez Trace Parkway doesn't get mowed for 3 weeks, that it's apocalyptic and the country's going to burn. I mean, come on. Let's not overvalue these agencies. Let's not make them all, quote, critical agencies, okay? That's just the truth.
And by the way, the Trace is the oldest trail in the country.
It is. Yeah, it's beautiful. It runs right through Tupelo, Mississippi, our sit town of our headquarters here. So that's a beautiful, beautiful federal parkway. But, you know, there was all these, and then Obama, when it happened during Obama, you know, he intentionally told them to shut down these various parks, even though they didn't have to. They had the money to pay the people. But he wanted to shut them down just to show that, look, the Republicans are the big bad bears here. But my point is this Congress, you know, debating over budgets and debt ceilings. I mean, this is good stuff. I mean, this is healthy stuff. This is the kind of debate and rigor to the little extent we got a little bit of rigor here. This is what we need. I mean, this status quo, print as much money as we want. Who needs a debt ceiling? It's really a bad way to operate. So the fact that they're actually having to sit down and talk about this, I mean, that is a step in the right direction, albeit a very small step. Also, the debt ceiling, by the way, just to give you a little background here, this idea that the debt ceiling is its own thing over here and then the budget is its own thing over here, that's completely not true. These two things are married to each other, all right? Without a debt ceiling, you don't have a budget. Without a budget, you don't need a debt ceiling. All right, so that's this idea that we're negotiating on one and we're not on the other, that's a flat-out lie. That's gamesmanship. That's spin 101 in the media world. The budget really drives the debt ceiling in reality. So we got to rein in that budget a little bit. And you know, the Republicans are proposing a 1% 1% increase, a limited 1% increase in the federal budget year over year for the next 10 years. That's generous. If I were up there, I'd say we're going to shrink this puppy. We're going to shrink this budget by 5 to 10% year over year. And you don't talk about layoffs. We're about to have some layoffs in the federal government. We're going to beat out Tech Central. You know, they're having all these big tech layoffs. We're going to outbeat them, that being the federal government. So a little bit of cut, a little bit of leanness won't hurt anybody. We'll be back in a few.
At the Core podcast are available at AFR.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to The Core here on American Family Radio. Glad to have you with us today on the program. It's Worship Wednesday, and that's our worship song for the day. Hey, Wesley Wildman's in studio with us. Yes, we are related quite closely. My brother Wesley's in with us. Glad to have you on.
Welcome to everybody to Wednesdays with Wesley on The Core. Today we're going to be discussing...
I'm here with you.
Sharing, I'm really finding my groove.
Yeah.
And joining you on the court. So much so that I lost where I was and I was ready to go.
Yeah, that didn't sound like joining. That sounded like taking over.
Yeah. I apologize for that. Let me back up. We've got a great program. Well, we've had a great program thus far. I've been listening upstairs.
Yeah, because I've been on.
That's right. That's right. I've been listening on AF. You need to just stop and give me my coffee mug, all right?
Okay.
All right. I've been listening on AFR.net upstairs in my office. So for those that don't have terrestrial radio, you can find us on the app, AFR app, or AFR.net. That's where I've been listening. So program's been going great. I've been doing my prep. And so I'm looking forward to having a good segment with you discussing the next topic. But before I do, we got to remind our audience that we're coming up on a deadline for MFL.
Yes. Yeah, we did bump out the registration deadline to the end of May. All right. So we're going to leave that open until the end of this month. AFA.net/events is where you can register. The dates for that event are July 6th through the 8th, coming up in July 6th through the 8th, on July 6th through the 8th. And that's our Marriage and Life Conference here in Tupelo, Mississippi. Well, I'll be there. Wesley will be there. Our whole team will be there. And you can register at afa.net/events.
That's right. And, you know, we have to have a deadline because we have to begin to prepare for the lanyards and all the preparation goes into it. But we knew looking at we had just a few left, and we hated not to leave that open just for a little bit longer to try to fill every spot that we have.
Yeah, we used to close it out a little sooner because we were still fine-tuning the process.
That's right.
But our teams got the process very well in their grasp. And so, we can close it out at the end of May, turn those lanyards, all those custom printed materials.
There's a lot more than that. That's just what comes to mind.
Yeah,
a lot of work that goes in.
Yeah, we're talking about these custom printed materials. It's got name on it.
Yep.
That stuff's got to be custom printed at the print shop. So that's why we try to close out registration at least a month before the event. Hey, Wesley, I've got a clip that I want us to talk about. So, you and I have talked about, the biblical ethic of work, how God created us in Genesis to work with our hands, how it's a good thing. Work should be viewed as a good thing.
It's very satisfying, sense of accomplishment. The things that we're taught, the things that we work for, things we earn things by working.
Yeah, and there's a biological or a scientific response. God built us with different triggers, and to your point, when we work and we complete tasks, and we do things with our hands, it gives us a sense of fulfillment. And that's just not that's not this, idea out there in space that nobody can really put their hands on. I mean, these are scientific facts about
that's
how
right.
our bodies are wired.
100%.
But I've got this clip of this congressman Congressman Khanna from California, Democrat. And he was on with...
Democrat from California?
Yeah, I know. Oh,
this is
going to
be a fun segment.
Yeah, I mean, they say there's a lot of them out there. Mm-hmm. But you, he was interviewing with MSNBC, and the discussion was going on about... Andrea Mitchell's the host of this MSNBC show, by the way. But they were talking about how Republicans are wanting work requirements for federal benefits, all right, in this latest budget/debt ceiling negotiation. And this congressman, Wesley, I'll let you listen to it, but he said absolutely no work requirements. As a matter of fact, making someone work is, quote, cruel. Let's listen.
I want to turn to the debt limit talks today because the president certainly hinted at one of the things that he might be prepared to compromise in, which is work requirements for federal aid programs, for food assistance, Medicaid benefits. Is that a non-starter for Democrats like yourself?
It's a non-starter for me. I mean, Peter Edelman, I remember, resigned over this in the 1990s. I mean, the studies are so clear that work requirements don't make people work more. What it does is deprive folks who need the help of food, people who are on the street, people who are homeless, people who are disabled. And it's just cruel, especially as we see the slowing down of the economy. I'm hopeful the president will stick to what he said, that we pay our debts and then we can negotiate on the budget. By the way, one thing we should cap is tax cuts for the wealthy and for corporations. Why don't we have a cap on that? That will start to reduce our deficits.
So Wesley, we've got two things here. We've got no work requirements for federal benefits. And then, by the way, let's go after the rich.
Yep. You caught that too, right? Yeah. There. Yep. Yeah, that's exactly right. Hey, before we go any further in this discussion, almost not needed to be said, but as we restart and reset many days, because we forget things, anytime you enter into a Democratic policy, which in this case is to pay government pays for everybody to do nothing. Before we get into that, we got to know that the Democratic policies will almost always begin with playing on the emotional side and in an extreme example. One of the examples that they've used that I've got right here is that, and in fact, this is not even an extreme example, but listen to this. So and Rodriguez was one of their, a lady that they interviewed in order to make the case for not cutting this. And she was 42 years old. She said that she had to work long hours throughout the week at a retail job in which paid her $17 an hour, and she had to work 40 hours a week. But that wasn't enough. So therefore, she's the example for why we need to give $17 an hour. She worked 40 hours a week, and that's an example.
Yeah.
That seems like everyday jobs to me.
Right.
You know what I mean? Regardless of how you spend your money or what portion of the country you live in, that should be contentment.
Yeah.
You know, if for anything. But that's the examples that they use. So just remember, they're going to play on your emotions. They're going to mention about. You know, they're going to give you an example of a homeless or whatever. They did a bad job giving an example there because, yeah.
Well,
you know,
go ahead. And this is the party, Wesley, where work is, these people, they're so out of touch with average Americans.
That's right.
You know, they try to play it two ways. They try to go, well, you know, we need to help the poor. But the poor don't need to do anything in return. That's their mantra. So, like, basically the government's going to give handouts, and there's no personal responsibility or work ethic involved in any of their policies.
Right.
It's you sit on the couch, and we got you, man. And then, by the way, if you bust your tail and you're energetic and you start your own company and you're successful and you turn it into like a multimillion-dollar company, that's bad. We're going to tax you until you can't run your business anymore.
Yes, to your point, I quoted just a while ago from an article from U.S. Today, and I'll continue in that same article. It says proposed GOP cuts of SNAP could leave millions food insecure. Here's one of the things that the Republicans proposed. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Y'all ready for this? People 18 through 49 who do not have children should be required to work or participate in work programs for at least 20 hours a week in order to receive their benefits.
Yes. And you go, so what's the problem?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's what this Congress is talking about.
That's what he's talking about. Yes.
That's exactly what he's talking about. The Republicans are going, look, if we're going to give these federal benefits, these luscious, lavish benefits that really the government has no business dealing in.
Which we'll get to right before the...
But if we're going to do this, then at least these Americans out there, they're going to benefit off of these tax dollars and this federal money and these federal benefits. At a minimum, let the people work 3 days a week, 20 hours a week, which is not even 3 days. That's like 2.5 days of work. But the Democrats say, no, you don't need to do anything. We got you. You don't need to put forth any kind of effort.
In the same way that the Democratic Party uses in the pro-life discussion, in the same way they use the rape, the incest, and those very 2-3% of abortions, and they use that as their platform to mandate all abortions, is the same way they're going to pull out one or two homeless people, or they're going to pull out one or two people who are have an injury in which they're unable to work or whatever. Yeah, but we already have
We already have disability.
We already have disability.
The context here, to your point, is able-bodied adults.
Yeah, and that's what it says.
But they don't give
you
the context.
No,
they use these broad terms, and they actually use probably some of these stories they use are out of context.
Yes.
And don't even apply to this work requirement. Yeah. But yeah, Wesley, this is we've basically got the problem that I have, Wesley, is these are the people running the country.
Yeah.
And so we've got incompetent, lazy people that don't want. So if you're telling other people that they don't need to work, I mean, what kind of work ethic do you have?
Right.
Like, how are you a congressman and helping run the country if you yourself don't want anybody else to work? I mean, usually people that have a good work ethic also want to push that good work ethic on others. But these people are apparently lazy.
Yeah, you're right. And that's why the church always does a better job of giving a hand up, whereas the government always gives a hand out.
Yeah.
And we all know that once you give a government program out, that it's impossible, nearly impossible, at least within a generation, to take that back.
Yes.
Because they're going to, in fact, I have it here somewhere, but it says that these were added. By the way, these were added benefits. I have it here somewhere. Maybe I'll find it
on top
it a second.
Of probably existing benefits.
Yeah, that's the thing. They're wanting to go back to the original benefits.
Yes.
I have it in here somewhere. I read that earlier, but we're talking about they're wanting to take away added benefits to the already benefits, and they're saying, how can you do that? That's cruel and unfair when they were already added. So
and to your point, Wes, to your point about these about government run versus like nonprofit run or private run, I mean, even look, and I know our healthcare system is definitely got its issues, and we've covered them on the show. We've interviewed experts on this as far as the insurance and the the nursing shortage and all this and the regulation and the bureaucracy. But, Wesley, even with that being said, you've got the VA out there, Veterans Affairs medical facilities around the country, and then you've got these private run like St. Jude, Le Bonheur, and others, and there's tons out there of these private hospital systems. Some of their work's even charitable work where they don't even charge anybody. But they do things so much more efficient.
Absolutely.
Like you get the feds involved, you get like FEMA involved or the VA. I mean, you're talking like you talk about bureaucracy, delays, non-answers, overspending. I mean, it's just like it gives you a headache where you don't even want to touch it. But you get the private sector involved, and you know why the private sector is better is because they don't have 100% job security like these federal bureaucrats. Like, if you don't do your job in the private sector, you're out.
Yep.
But if you're a government official and you don't do your job, you actually get promoted. So, to your point, Wesley, the private sector is always better.
It is. And I understand in the last 20, 30 years, we have seen a good amount of problems in the church, especially moving toward wokeism. Now, there's a healthy remnant of Christians and great churches out there, but we've seen this creep in. But one thing the church across the board has not had a problem with, and that is helping the homeless. That is giving to the poor. That is helping widows, giving to the needy. Every church I've ever been a part of in some capacity, whether it's through visiting, whether it was a member of, every church I ever know, they have a benevolence fund.
Yes.
And no one has any problems through the – and each church has their process of which they – deem their benevolence fund to go toward helping someone in these cases in which we mentioned.
Yeah.
And so the Bible teaches that if you don't work, you don't eat.
Yes.
And so the biblical principle there, if you don't work, you don't eat. And so I believe that to go further than this congressman's going,
yes,
I believe that the Bible teaches it's very clear that the church has the responsibility of meeting the needs of their community, local community,
yes,
and they're doing that.
Orphans and widows.
That's
what Scripture says.
Orphans and widows. And I've been a part of this in town here, where the churches have gotten together, dozens of churches across denominations, and we've fed those who are in need.
Yes.
And we've taken care of them. We do that here. I know they're doing that all across America. We don't need the government involved in taking care of people.
Yes, and to your point, Wesley, the problem, the root problem that can and should be addressed, folks, we're not talking about not helping widows and orphans. We're not talking about maybe not doing what the Bible says. No, we're talking about able-bodied adults.
Yes,
specifically,
that's good. Yes.
Specifically, Wesley, what's the major problem we've got is able-bodied adult men,
yes,
that are sitting on the couch.
Yep.
That is a problem, and those are the very people that should not get assistance.
Yep.
If you just choose that I'm not working, I'm not going to break a sweat, I'm not going to get calluses on my hand just because I don't want to, well, tough, you're going to go hungry.
Yep. And you know, and it's that right there that I'm surprised has not already destroyed our country more than it has. And I'm glad for the red states. I'm glad for the pushback, because if they had it their way, everybody in the country would be dependent upon the government for their everyday needs.
Yes.
That's what you would get. And so
yes,
we're going to push back. Also, remember what the scripture says about this, in addition to fighting for incremental changes.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, thanks, Wesley.
Hey, glad. Glad to be
all
on.
Right, folks, that's one part of the unemployment numbers they won't tell you, is how many people are on the sidelines that are able-bodied adults that have chosen not to work. That's not in our unemployment numbers. That's a number that needs to be looked at. We'll be back in a few.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Walker Wildman.
Welcome back to the program. We'll take your calls in the latter part of this segment, 888-589-8840, 888-589-8840. We'll take your calls later in the program, later in the show here. Hey, I do want to introduce our next guest, Mississippi Agricultural Commissioner Andy Gibson's on the line with us. Commissioner Gibson, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, Walker. It's great to be with you. Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. So on my show, I've talked about a couple things, various things, but specifically under your purview or realm, I've talked about China purchasing U.S. agricultural land and basically buying up these family farms around the country. You know, this seems like a topic far off from a lot of people, one of those where, you know, if you're not a farming family or a local farm, then it really doesn't affect you. But that couldn't be farther from the truth, Commissioner Gibson. Tell us why foreign adversaries, i.e. China, buying local farms is a big deal and important to all Americans.
Well, it's a critical issue. You know, our food security as a nation is stronger than probably anywhere else in the world. And God has blessed this country in so many ways, but one of the ways is that we produce not only our own food, all that we need, but a portion of it for the entire world. And so we've always had that as a strength here in America. Now, what we have seen in recent years, and Congress has been keeping track of this for a number of years, but in 2021, a report came out that showed that, in fact, foreign governments are buying up large chunks of American farmland. And that is our food supply. It's our, not only our food supply, but a food supply of, as I said, a large portion of the world. Most of the countries who are on that list are countries that America has had some sort of a peace treaty with, like I see the Canada and the Netherlands and Italy, and even Germany is on that list, Great Britain. But you can get this report on the USDA website. But what it showed that should get everybody's attention is since 2015, on average, foreign governments and foreign-owned entities have bought about 2.2 million acres of American farmland per year. So it's growing exponentially, and we're very concerned. I'm concerned. I think all Americans should be concerned, and certainly Mississippians, that we keep American agriculture American. We keep Mississippi agriculture Mississippi, because if we give up our right to produce our own food, we're a sitting duck. We're the weakest country in the world. I've been to countries around the globe that don't have the capacity to produce food, and they are in the weakest position. And we never want to get in that position, especially with folks like China swooping in here and buying up our farmland.
Yeah, and to your point, you know, this is America already has several weaknesses on the China front, talking about technological disadvantages. You got the semiconductor disadvantage. You've got the lithium battery disadvantage. And then lastly, the pharmaceutical supply chain. So America has our vulnerabilities on this whole supply chain front. The last thing you think we'd be doing is selling our farmland. I mean, what keeps us alive, the very essentials of life, food, you'd think we wouldn't be selling that to China. Let me ask you this, Commissioner Gibson. Once again, we're talking to Mississippi Agricultural Commissioner Andy Gibson. Are there things that commissioners like yourself or state legislatures can do to prevent this?
Yes, there are. In fact, I'm already working on it. I have started this process earlier this year, looking at reading that report, seeing what laws we have on the books in Mississippi. We actually do have some laws on the books that put some restrictions on ownership of land. But the problem is nobody has been enforcing those. So I wrote a letter to our Attorney General Lynn Fitch, an opinion request about those laws. And basically she agreed that these laws are on the books. Nobody's enforcing it. The Mississippi legislature recently passed a law, House Bill 280, that created a task force, and I'm on that task force to study this and to make a report back to the legislature by December 1st as to what we do about this to keep it from happening. And so we'll be doing a lot of research. We'll be doing a lot of outreach and getting input. But I'll just give you two quick examples of how this is a real deal. Just 10 years ago, Smithfield Farms, which is the world's largest pork producer, based in America, it was bought by a Chinese company, and now it is owned by a Chinese company. So that's when you go to buy your ham at the grocery store, you see Smithfield Farms. That's Chinese owned now. And back during COVID, they were shutting down plants across the country. And so they have some control over that aspect. And then recently, what we've seen is a lot of investment companies being formed that nobody knows who they are, where they're from. And they come in here and just make a really sweet offer to somebody to buy their land, a retiring farmer. I heard about a case the other day where a retiring farmer was paid nearly double the fair market value by some unknown investment company. So this is happening under our nose, and we need to wake up, and we need to do something about it. And I appreciate the legislature, our Mississippi legislature, at least giving us a vehicle to make recommendations, and we'll be doing that by December 1st of this year.
The last topic I want to pick your brain on is the topic of ESG. It's basically the woke version of investing, where they take, instead of financial return, they take this Marxist globalist return and political angle to investing and really weaponize our monies to support left-wing Marxist agendas. But this is really picking up in the financial world and the investing world. How is this affecting farmers? Because a lot of these ESG standards, which many of them are not even rooted in reality or science, many of them go after farmers. How is this affecting farmers and the loan industry out there?
Well, it's a woke globalist agenda that's already taken root very well in Europe, for example. I just returned from a trade mission to Europe. We want to sell them our products. We don't want to sell them our land. But over there, what I learned was this ESG, the corporate policies that are against, you know, they would say they're for protecting the environment. Well, that sounds really good. But when you get down to it, what they're against is agriculture production, food production. And so in Europe, you see a number of farms, especially in the Netherlands, that are being shuttered or shut down because the corporate policies that are requiring these different, practices, they're clamping down on farmers' ability to produce food. The farmers in Europe are on strike. I mean, they are on protest because their own government is stopping their ability to produce food in that country. They still got to eat. They just won't be able to produce food. That ESG policy that now has been embraced by our own Securities and Exchange Commission in America and by other investment groups that are really pulling the strings behind the scenes, it is a great threat. And it's the equivalent of what we've seen in the social moral sphere of entertainment, where these corporations are saying, we want you to behave like this, even though it's against everything we believe as Americans, as Christians. They want you to do this. And then if you don't, well, they'll boycott you. Well, that's what's happening in the financial world. And I do want to appreciate our own state treasurer, David McRae, for taking a stand against this. I appreciate his voice on this as well. We got to watch it. This is a threat, equal in threat to a government agenda, is this corporate agenda to shut down farming operations due to climate emissions, so-called, you know, other agenda items that they have. So ESG is a big deal. It's coming, and it is a danger and a risk to our, not only our farmers, but our food security. And I want to emphasize that.
Yeah.
It is our obligation to speak out against these policies when they threaten our own nation's ability to produce our own food.
Absolutely. Commissioner Gibson, thanks so much for coming on the program.
Appreciate you for having me. Thank you. Take care.
All right. That's Mississippi Ag Commissioner Andy Gibson talking about ESG, also talking about China buying up U.S. farmland. You know, this is really an opportunity. By the way, we'll take your calls at 888-589-8840, 888-589-8840 on the topics we discussed on the program today. But, you know, this is really a fumbled opportunity. This is a complete missed opportunity for the West and specifically for America. And here's why. As other nations go woke, as other nations go Marxist, as other nations continue to shoot themselves in the foot over these idiotic Marxist, globalist, unscientific policies that are all political, all aimed at centralized control, as the rest of the world goes that direction, America has the opportunity to be a beacon of hope, liberty, and supply in all of these avenues. Like as Sweden and Holland and other European nations continue, and Germany, as they continue to neuter themselves, we could be raising our hand going, hey, if you want our food, we got it for you, and continue to expand our reach and our control and our partnership with other nations, and by the way, bring in billions of dollars to the U.S., the same thing with the energy industry. At a time where we could say, hey, if you don't want Russian oil, come get our oil. We're cutting off our own supply. So like we had this 2 to 4 year window to completely position ourselves as Americans, as the United States, as a beacon of abundance, of prosperity, and of hope to the entire free world and the entire West. And as soon as that opportunity arose, here we are fumbling it, you know, talking Marxist garbage and cutting off our own energy and agricultural supply. I mean, you talk about running a nation into the ground and doing so intentionally. That's what we're experiencing now. We'll go to the lines. We'll talk to Kim over in Alabama. Hey, Kim, welcome to the court.
Hey, thank you, sir. My question's about your word requirements for receiving federal benefits. Now, could it be that they're fighting so hard not to make them work because of all these illegal aliens and foreign nationals that are coming across the border receiving federal benefits? And if they got to work to receive them, how are they going to get all these work requirements done? They won't be on the government dole, and they won't be beholden to the government if they got to work.
Good point, Kim. You know, is this all aimed at shielding the illegals? Is this all aimed at making sure that the illegal immigrants can just sit on the couch and kick back and sign up for federal benefits and not have to work an hour in their life in the U.S.? I don't know. Probably could be partial motivation, but this is a party of laziness. This is a party of entitlement. This is a party of handouts, and really the party of unrealistic worldview and expectations. So I think this is probably applicable to all people out there, but this is a losing strategy from a from a mindset of wanting Americans to succeed, to thrive, to be independent, to earn their own living, and to build their own futures. It's a loser on that front. Let's go to North Carolina. Larry's on the line. Hey, Larry, welcome to the Core.
Thank you. Just a question. In the land that the Chinese are buying up, if things got bad enough, not necessarily war, but just bad enough, and the right administration we're in, because I know this administration wouldn't do that, the right administration we're in, could that land be seized back? Could the federal government say, okay, we're going to take it back?
Yeah. Good question. Very smart question, Larry. I'll let you go and answer on the air here. I'm not a lawyer, but just knowing what I know about the law and how things work, there can be laws passed both federally and at the state level that would prevent U.S. lands from being sold to foreign nations, all right? Specifically foreign adversaries is probably, they probably could throw in some caveats there, although I don't know, I don't think it's a good idea to sell U.S. land, specifically U.S. agricultural land. We're not talking about high rises. We're not talking about apartment complexes. We're talking about U.S. agricultural land, which immediately falls it under, brings it under the national security realm. I don't know that any foreign country should be buying U.S. agricultural land. That's like a foreign nation owning like our missile supply chain, a company in that supply chain. So to answer your question, there could be laws to prevent future sales, but as far as retroactively going back and seizing lands owned by foreign nations in China, that probably could be done. It would probably basically be a forced sale. So the government can't just go around seizing land, but the government can basically say, hey, you know, you got 12 months to sell what you own back at a fair market rate back to a U.S. entity, a U.S. LLC or U.S. incorporation, a corporation. So, yeah, there's probably things that can be retroactive from a national security standpoint to go back and get those lands back under U.S. ownership. But that would be a very monumental and historic move there. We got about a minute left. Hey, Jim, in Illinois, we got about 30 seconds. What's on your mind?
Okay, I just got to say, we have to understand what's going on here. Our current administration has sold out to China. We know that it's a compromise. We even know that as President Biden was selling us out. And until we change administrations, it's either going to be selling our government secrets, selling our government land, anything to compromise and bring down our country. We have to understand that.
Absolutely, Jim. Good point there. To your point, you're 100% right. This administration is corrupt. This administration is 100% compromised. And the only lasting solution is to get rid of this administration and never replace it with another similar administration. Spot on, Jim. That's one of the key solutions here. We'll be back next time.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.